Good morning, and welcome to Choices Podcast, where you always have choices. Okay, today's guest is one we have been waiting for, Kevin O'Hara of Habits Unplugged. Kevin has helped countless people live alcohol-free lives around the world. He comes to us from Andorra, a tiny, breathtakingly beautiful country in the Pyrenees Mountains, situated right between France and Spain. Welcome, Kevin, and how are you today, sir?
I'm very good. Thank you very much.
Excellent.
You?
Excellent. I'm well. It's a rainy day in New York City. We're dealing with that, but it's believe it or not, it's warm, so that's all good. I'm going to go into asking you the first questions.
Yeah.
And the first one is, so how does a guy from West Island end up in Andorra coaching sobriety?
I kind of moved to Spain after my son. My son was about 19, 20, and he started college in Galway. And myself and my partner Esther, we decided we've been thinking about it for a while, and we thought we'd move to Spain. So we got on a boat and came across to Spain. So we were in Spain for 10 years, and we've been traveling up and down this country for a while. And the summers in Spain are quite hot, you know, around 45 degrees Fahrenheit, or Celsius, not Fahrenheit. So it's pretty hot. So we decided, we found this little place, this little nook in the Pyrenees, and where it was a lot cooler in the summer. So we decided that was the place. So we moved here.
It sounds very exotic. Is it so? I mean, I'm surrounded by a building.
It's not. I mean, it's a small country, so, and there's a small population. The towns are fairly packed. There's a lot going on here, but there's a lot of places where you can escape where there's no building, so you can get out into the mountains and forests. And even though it's a small place, so it's beautiful, you know, nice little haven.
That sounds wonderful. It's a lifestyle I eventually would like to live someday myself. So, Kevin, you broke a 30-year drinking habit. How did we do that?
Just stopping, really. I came to the conclusion that I was being a bad influence on my son. You know, when he was coming over for his vacations over to Ireland or to Spain, we were using it. You know, when you're celebrating and you're a drinker, that's what you do. And my son is 20, 21, and we're going out drinking together. And I was watching him after we'd had a session walking around the pubs. And we were on the beach the night before, kind of, what would you call it, sort of wrestling around. And he'd locked his iPod on the sand. And the next morning, the two of us with a hangover, and he said, "I've lost my iPod." So I'm sat on this balcony watching him pacing backwards and forwards with his head down in the sand. And I just thought, I can't do this. Every time he comes over now, we're going to be drinking. So that was the start of it. You know, I'd been thinking about it for a long time anyway, you know, that I had to make changes in my life. I'd tried to moderate for so many years with no results. And it was just the straw that broke the camel's back, you know. So
there you go. I understand. So two things. Did you use any type of assistance? Sometimes we go to rehabs or programs. And it's a two-part question. Did it also help your son, you, stopping drinking?
It is. That was the point, was to try and help him. That was why I was doing it, you know, to try and get him off the alcohol. I mean, he didn't have much of the same type of problem that I had.
Gotcha.
I didn't use any assistance. I thought, this is the way I'm going to do it. I was always a walker, so that helped me a lot, just getting out walking for 2, 3 hours, 4 hours every day. The idea was to get him to stop. He stopped drinking now for, I think he's nearly a year and a half. So it took a while. You know, I haven't had a drink now in it'll be 11 years in January. So he's a year and a half into it, and his life has changed beyond everything in his mentality and the way he thinks, just in the clarity of thought and the idea. I mean, when you're living in Ireland, it's a social thing. It's so interwoven into the fabric of life that it's very difficult to get out of it. But, you know, anyone who does, they find that there's other things, there's alternatives as well, you know, so you don't have to drink. I mean, 50% of Irish people don't drink, at least, so.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
You really, because Ireland and even the Irish here in the city just will have that reputation, you know. So alcohol, they say in the medical journals, is a disease. What are your feelings on that? Do you feel it is a disease that you get, like a cancer or MS or something like that?
I don't think so. I don't think it should be. I think maybe for doctors, it's an expedient thing for them to think about it as it's something to be treated as a disease. Because, you know, how do you go to a doctor and get treated for something that they don't really generally know much about? You know, for me, it's a habit. It's a habit that is, as I said, it becomes so fixed in people's lives that they're drinking for the, you know, I started drinking for peer pressure. You know, your mates are drinking and you don't want to be left out. But then I realized in my life that I could use it for shyness, you know, so go into a bar, have a few drinks, and I wasn't shy anymore.
Yeah.
I wasn't compos mentis anymore, but I wasn't shy at least. And then I think as you go through life, it just becomes habitual. I think dependency is a better way of looking at it because, you know, dependency, then you can put on a scale from 0 to 100. And a lot of people, when they start drinking, they become dependent on it, you know, to even if you're drinking once a week, it starts to become a part of your life. And from that sense, you get dependent on it, you know, and obviously 100 then is off the scale. It's another end of where people are dependent and they, you know, you get up in the morning and you have to have a drink, that kind of thing. So,
yeah. I got a lot of identification with that. I mean, I started drinking, you mentioned peer pressure with my older brothers. So I started drinking with my older brothers and I wanted to impress them and then friends and then you just look up and it's just a way of life now, you know. And all right, so what is the first and most important thing when it comes to your program? Is it this walking you do, or is it what do you attest to your sobriety?
In terms of the program, kind of work off the principle of you first have to stop the flow of alcohol, then do the work, and then move on. And I think that's last part, moving on, is the most important part to me, because you're leaving behind that identity, not only of the drinker, but of the alcoholic or the, you know, you're moving on from the alcohol in any way, shape or form. So it's like, for me, the first step is a step. You step across the line, you step through a door, whatever way you want to say it. You know, you have to stop the alcohol before you can do anything else.
What are the specific things you work on, specific things that you do?
Then it's a process. A lot of the stuff that we do, I think for the first two, three months, it depends on the person as well. It's just coping without your life, without alcohol in your life anymore. I think you've, in the beginning, like we said, it's the more you've been drinking, the more parts of your life are being not controlled by alcohol, but you're using alcohol in, you know, so the more areas of your life. And then when you take the alcohol out, you're still in that frame of mind. You know, you're still, all the pathways are still there, all the routines and rituals, you know, your friends are probably all drinkers. So I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of coping just being without the alcohol, you know, and sort of socializing, you know, relaxation. How do you do any of those things? That takes a while just for the person to get up every day, know that they're going to go through the day. And no matter what happens during the day, they're going to go to bed that night without a drink. That's a mindset that they really have to get themselves into before they can move on, you know, before they can move on with everything else. And then it's mindset shifts. It's a lot of the time it's dealing with painful stuff in life. You know, life is going to give you shit sometimes, you know, everyone's life is giving them stuff, you know, so you have to deal with that. You know, and understand that not all pain is bad, you know. So
I know you have something in your repertoire called "What is the con?" What does that mean? What is the con?
In terms of the alcohol, I think everyone knows that alcohol itself, we're talking about the the advertisements, the marketing, the way it's pushed across. You know, you go into a wine bar and you've got the sommelier, you know, giving you the spiel about the wine. And that happens. I mean, I drank Guinness. So I don't think anyone drinks, and nobody walks into a bar and says, give me some alcohol. It's all wrapped up in a nice little bow, you know, in it. You know, so like I said, for me, it was Guinness. I wouldn't drink Murphy's. I wouldn't drink Beamish. It had to be Guinness, you know, two different stouts. So, and I think the same thing happens across the board. You hear people talking about whiskies and brandies and in all this kind of, with all this flavor and flow, you know. So that's the con, I think, is people are conned into putting a toxin into their body for fun.
I gotcha. So, Kevin, how is moderation a con?
In terms of, I think, I always look at moderation as that cycle of, you know, people don't even try to moderate until there's enough pain to get them to step across the line and say, right, I'm going to do something about this. And instead of saying, I'm going to stop, it's one of those things that I went through so many times in my life where I was, you know, that the thing that will help you the most is to stop drinking. But the next best thing is to cut the alcohol down. I think a lot of people talk about moderation in terms of their, it's the alcohol. If only I could drink less alcohol, then I would take away the problem, right? But it's, for me, it's the reverse of that. It's you're fighting a battle over and over again, you know, for the same thing, because you moderate, the pain dips down, you go back to normal again, the pain rises up, you moderate again, the pain dips down, you know, so it's this cycle of moderation and, yeah.
Very good, very good. Kev, is moderation sustainable?
I don't think, it depends who you're asking. You know, I think for people who are moderating, then it's sustainable. But then again, it's, you know, you're talking about still putting a toxin into your body, you know what I mean? So it's, you know.
So do you believe in sustaining completely, no drinking at all, or do you believe there should be some moderation and you can continue to drink if you don't drink to excess? What's your thinking?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day that it's only since I stopped drinking that I was able to move on from it. I think if you're trying to moderate and you're still in that brain of thinking that alcohol is giving you anything outside of yourself, you know, it's giving you that relaxation, it's giving you the socialization, whatever it is, you know, you're still in that frame of mind. Whereas when you stop,
I always tell people, look, the moderation thing is a battle that you have to keep going over and over again.
Whereas when you stop drinking, you've won the war, you know, you move on from it. So,
gotcha. So, Kev, what do you think some of the biggest challenges are when people are trying to stay sober?
I think what we were saying earlier about relaxation and socialization, I think those two are big challenges. With friends, I mean, one of the things that I get, either you've got people who are isolated, who have found that they can't go out and meet people because of their drinking, you know, people who drink on their own, and then they find it difficult to get friends. Or you've got the opposite, people who are their whole alcohol drinking. That was me in Ireland, was all my mates were all drinkers. So when I stopped drinking, about 5 years before I got a DUI, and I was off the road for a year. So I had to stop. I won't drink anymore until I get my license back. And I tried to go back into the pub with my mates, and it just didn't work at all. You know, everyone's getting drunk and you're not. So it's, you get trapped in not only the alcohol, but you get trapped in the lifestyle as well. And that's the difficult part, is people trying to really push themselves in a different direction, or even to understand that there is a different direction. If you ask people in Ireland about alcohol, they'll say everybody drinks, you know, but because you're in that bubble. So it's extracting yourself out of that bubble and experimentation and trying new things, and, you know, some of the stuff you're going to fail with. Plus you've got no escape hatch anymore, you know. You haven't got this thing. When you're a drinker and things are not going your way, you can drink and you can forget about it. Now you've got to deal with things head on, and you can't forget about it anymore. So it's there's a lot of issues like that. That's why we say it's that process of staying stopped that's the real issue, you know. Stopping drinking alcohol, I can tell a five-year-old how to do that, you know, but it's staying stopped and growing back into yourself and becoming a different person, becoming that non-drinker, if you like, you know, and getting rid of that drinker's brain. So that's the issue. There's a lot of them there, you know, but and it depends on the person. So, you know, everyone's different.
Yes, yes. I do agree. You know, I used it as a social lubricant all the time. Mm. You know, I'd walk in, I like to say, you walk in as Pee Wee Herman into the bar and you can walk out Superman, you know.
That's it, exactly. Yeah.
All right. So my next question, the comments in your videos, alcohol is a great decompressor. What are some of your suggestions for dealing with stress and maintaining sobriety?
First one is, I think you can split it up into two things. So first one is just dealing with the short-term stuff when you're there. A lot of people, they focus, let's talk about it from the perspective of, I teach people how to stop smoking as well. And with smoking, you get up in the morning and you have a cigarette and then you have another one and it's continuous throughout the day. With drinking, it's generally for 90% of the people, it's towards the end of the day that they start drinking, you know. It's when they're finished work and, as you say, they're decompressing or chilling out with their mates. So focus on that time. And generally, if you can get somebody to get out for a walk or just to change that mindset, don't stay in the same place. Don't go to the places where you would normally drink. Just in that, you know, obviously don't go to a bar. But, you know, if you're at home and you're drinking at home, get out of the house, you know, change your mindsets, do something else, listen to an audiobook or music or whatever it is. But you don't have to do it for the whole day. It's just within that space of time. And you'll find that if you can get past that first hour or two, then the rest of the evening, you know, you'll sail past it, you know. In the long term, then it's changing, as I said, mindsets. It's just experimenting and, it's dealing with boredom and just those mundane things in life, you know. And I think, you know, my life is way more exciting than it was when I was drinking, because when I was drinking, it was the same things that I was doing over and over again, going to the same bars, drinking the same stuff, hanging around with the same people. And now I just do different things. I mean, I wouldn't be talking to you, you know, if I'd still be drinking. So you get what I mean?
Yeah, I certainly do. I wouldn't be talking to you either.
Yeah.
So can you tell me, do you have any parting thoughts for people that are on the fence or they are miserable and they're looking to change their lives? What are some of your thoughts on helping someone? Like if I came to you, for instance, and said, listen, I'm drinking too much. Help me.
Give it a go. I mean, it's for a start, it's you've got nothing to lose. You know, a lot of people are trying the 30-day challenges these days. And I think it might be a good start. The problem with the 30-day challenges is that people, you have the mindset then that you're going to go back onto alcohol. So it's kind of having it in your mind that maybe I'm going to give this a go and keeping that first and, you know, upfront in your brain. And then just see how you get on. But keep an open mind about it, you know. It's not for the one to try in that a lot of people don't stop. You know, a lot of times they try and try again, and it's that trying that can really sap somebody's self-confidence, you know. So sometimes that's where we come in the most, is we can give people advice and keep, you know, give encouragement and accountability. You know, that's one of the big things that we can do. So it is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah. Yeah. It's sometimes just the right word, hearing the right thing said, that flicks you over. Like I said, for me, it was watching my son walking along looking for an iPod. That was the thing that. So it depends. If a person doesn't want to change or they're not ready, it's very difficult to convince somebody to do something that they don't want to do. You know, they have to be in that frame of mind to do it. But, you know, hopefully something like this is, I mean, there's so, I've put so many videos up. We put up maybe 3 or 4 videos a day now. So it's just to give somebody different frames and maybe something will spark them to give it a go. Because
so if somebody wanted to get some help from you, How would they do so? How would they, is there a website? Do they call you directly? How do we do that?
Habitsv2.com, www.habitsv2.com. That's where all our information is. So that's where to go.
Great. Well, so Kevin, can you tell us a little bit more about your Unplugged, you know, the whole, how it works, what goes on?
Mostly it's video. So we've got a 2-week preparation stage. We sort of try and get people in the right mindset to stop in the flow. Then they stop the drinking, and then we go through coping. As I said earlier on, it's, you know, the first 2 or 3 months, it depends on the person. We help them to cope with just having the alcohol not in their system anymore, not in their life anymore, and help them to deal with their environments, deal with other people, which is a big thing. So we've got that side of the thing. It's a video every day for a year. Then we've got group calls where we get together and just chat about this. It's the best thing. I mean, it's, if you're trying to learn anything, you can pick up a book and you can learn a lot from the book. But if you can speak directly to the person who wrote the book, you're going to get a lot more sense, I think, you know, especially one-on-one sense. So, and then we have one-on-one calls. So it's just, we try and bring as many different challenges into it as possible, and encouragement, you know, accountability, as I said, is an important thing. So try and bring that into it. It's a good journey. So we've a lot of people like that. We've a lot of people on the program who are there for years, you know, and not because they drink anymore, but because they want to help other people. So we have people in the community that have taken, they just keep coming back to encourage other people. So we've got that.
Yeah. I'm a great believer. And you can't keep it unless you give it away.
It's definitely, I think it's one of the best ways that you can learn yourself is by teaching. So, you know, it's, definitely. I love your logo, by the way, that you always have choices.
Yeah. Thank you.
That statement is,
it's huge.
I think if you can get that into people's heads, that they have choices in this.
Because I do believe that. I believe a lot of the time people, you know, when you're in the insanity of it, you don't realize that you do have a choice. You just think, this is my life and I got to deal with it, you know, and it just doesn't have to be that at all.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
So I understand you don't use the words alcoholic or sober. Can you enhance that a little bit? Tell us a little bit.
Yeah, it's, I think it's a good thing to use it before you stop. I think if it can give you motivation to step across that line and to stop, I think it's a good, alcoholic is a good way of looking at things. But also, I think the alcoholic, that idea of alcoholic kept me drinking for a lot longer than I should have done, because I was never there, you know. My idea of an alcoholic was somebody who was in the gutter, you know, sleeping in the streets, and, you know, who'd lost everything. So I think, you can keep pushing that idea onwards and onwards. You might know somebody who's got a real bad problem with alcohol, but then you get to that stage and you can say, well, no, I'll push it a bit further, you know, not deliberately, but in your mind. And I think afterwards, then once you stop, I think you need to divorce yourself from the old. It's like having if you've got a divorce from a bad person in your life, you're not going to keep associating with that person, you know. And I think it's the same thing here. You have to think differently. And, you know, for me, sober was in between drinks, you know. So I'd drink on a Friday night, I'd be sober on a Saturday morning. I drink on a Saturday night, I'd be sober. So that was sober for me. So calling myself sober now, when alcohol has got, I mean, alcohol has got everything to do with my life in terms of helping other people, but it's got nothing to do with me and my life in putting it inside my body anymore. So that's, in a nutshell, why I don't use it. I think it's, I always refer to myself as being on this new journey, or, you know, it's just a better way of looking at things personally, you know, so.
Yeah. It's like it's like a diet. It's not a diet. It's a life change.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Because diets don't work. You can't come on and off them, because you'll just gain weight back. So
The weight loss industry knows that as well. They know that, you know, like if they, people are going to keep coming back to them and back to them. Every diet is the new diet, and every diet is the one that's going to bring you the weight loss. And they never do long term. Yeah.
It's got to take an extreme psychic change to
change exactly
that we're talking about.
Yeah.
All right. So I first want to say I want to thank you so much. I really, I enjoyed meeting you and talking with you. It's always
me too.
Always a pleasure. So I'm going to close with some comments, if you don't mind. Thank you for tuning in to You Always Have Choices. We're looking forward to seeing you next week. May God bless you and look after you always. Ciao.